Ghoulish greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of Bobby Mackey and Storyblocks, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Way back in the 30s, in the little town of Wilder, lived an old man and his lovely little daughter. They ran gambling for a living. It was the best place around. All the men would come and lay their money down. Her daddy was a jealous man, but Johanna fell in love. He kept saying the man dealt a bad hand.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift. Whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from the desolate desert to tropical paradise, from tiny village to big city and everything in between, it's absolutely appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
Luton, England, Arbela, Missouri, Panora, Iowa, Kalkalo, Australia, Oak Hill, West Virginia, and Herzogenaurach, Germany. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. My apologies. Tessa, butcherer of names. But anyways, everybody, thank you. Super appreciated. This week has been a wild one. I finished working for my mom and back in Pueblo now. The day I got back, we went to the reservoir to watch two Canadian air tanker super scoopers come back and forth, coming back every 10 minutes, swooping down, taking around 1,600 gallons each, filling in about 12 seconds, and then heading back to Aspen Acres Fire. As of now, well, when I wrote this, we were 28% contained. But now, as I'm recording this, right, it is now 35% contained, and it was quite a sight to behold. And then, just a couple of days ago, this past Thursday, actually, I get a text in the morning from my sister, Casey, and she's saying that there was a bear a street over from me. So Justin and I, we jump into the car. Bears are like my favorite animal ever. And we head that way, and it didn't take us more than a full minute until I sighted the bear. It was a gorgeous cinnamon-colored black bear, in little over a year old, and it was just wandering about. And she was so utterly precious. She looks around and she sees us and she climbs up on a wall and is walking back and forth, and I'm recording her and taking pictures of her, but you could obviously tell that this young bear was dazed and confused. Like many humans, she too had to evacuate. Her home was on fire and she tried to find refuge in a town. And I called 911, let them know that, hey, a young bear is out here and needs help. And after a while, I eventually lose track of the bear and go to the nearby Walmart to just do a little bit of shopping. I would say maybe like 30, 40 minutes later, it was less than an hour, I know that. I'm back home, we're putting groceries away, and Casey calls telling us that the bear has now been spotted in a church and old folks' home right near us, like throwing distance away. So again, Justin and I, we jump into the car, we make our way to the bear. It was now in a tree and someone was there with a tranquilizer gun. And they closed the street behind us and on one side of us. So we literally had a front row seat to what was taking place. And it was just, oh, so amazing. The man below looks up, aims, and carefully shoots his target, and the bear huffs and puffs, and it's moving around in the tree, and we see these tufts of brown fur and green leaves moving about, and Justin timed it. It was 7 minutes after the bear was hit. There are people below consisting of park rangers and firefighters and other people, and they have a sheet below, and 7 minutes after it was hit, it loses consciousness and it begins to fall. And it was almost like a last resort. It looks like its arm goes out to grab a branch and is hanging there for like a second. And then it comes falling down to the sheet. They then carefully lower the spare and assess it, and they just kind of wait. And I figured, you know, we watched it in the wild. We saw its safe capture. We had to stay till the end. I mean, it was a really hot day in Pueblo. For those who live here in Pueblo or who have been to Pueblo, especially in the summertime, you know that Pueblo's pretty much the hottest place in Colorado. I don't know why. How we got so lucky, but it's the hottest place in Colorado. So we're waiting around, and it takes about 20 minutes, and they finally load this young bear into the back of a truck where a crate was. And once I see that they have it confined, you know, I didn't want to be one of those people that like walks up and they're just like having to tell me to back off. I'm not one of those people, but I was just like anxiously wanting to see this precious bear. And so I asked them, hey, can I see the bear? I saw it in the wild and I called it in and whatever. And they were so kind and sweet. And they're like, yeah, sure, of course, come on over. And they told me that the cub, as they were assessing her, they found out that it was a little girl and her mama had most likely kicked her out, most likely because she had first year cubs to take care of and she was a second year cub. And I really feel for this little one, you know, it's her first year alone and these fires are just everywhere, everywhere. And this poor sweet girl, I mean, she was probably so confused and scared and alone. And I got to watch her sleep and she was breathing heavily and she was just so absolutely precious. I just fell in love with the little thing. And I did see, Casey sent me a video. So if it weren't for Casey, I wouldn't have seen any of this. So thank you, Casey. But, you know, she sent me this video of how they were able to safely release her back into the wild away from the fires. And it was just a wonderful day for sure. And I keep seeing her cute little face on Facebook now of them just about to release her. And so it was a good ending to a day that could have been a lot worse for this little girl. So I wish nothing but the best for her and her new future all alone out there. Love you, my little cinnamon girl. And then on Saturday, just a couple days ago, they had a car show at the Veterans Home in Walsenburg, and that was just so much fun. Got to see a lot of neat, amazing vehicles, and then got to meet some of awesome, phenomenal veterans. Got to hand out some of my scarves. And then we went to Carl's Jr. afterwards for a quick little bite. And I saw two more veterans, one in Desert Storm. And so that was really cool. It's always just like really neat meeting these people. So, yeah. Okay. If you guys and gals are in the area of Pueblo and you are a veteran, please reach out to me at knitting4veterans@gmail.com. And that's a number four. So knitting4veterans@gmail.com. I would love to meet up and give you a scarf. Now on to the episode. This week, we continue on with the Dearest Mom series. This is part five, my friends. And it takes us back into the 1940s as usual. A soldier, my grandfather, or my future grandfather, because he wasn't even a father then, is fighting in the Second World War, and he writes back home. Corporal Gerald Morrow writes back home on February 17th, 1944, somewhere in England. Dearest Mom, I received your letter of the 21st of January on the 11th of February, and I think it was delivered in darn good time considering that you left off my APO number when you addressed it. We had many cases where plain, ordinary airmail letters have arrived a lot faster than V-mail. So what do you say that unless we haven't got very much to write about, we'll just forget about the crumpled up, eye-straining V-mail things. And while we're on the subject of eyes, I might add that in a day or so, I am to report to the hospital to have my eyes examined for glasses. It was certainly a relief to receive your letter, because quite a while had elapsed before I had heard from you after Josephine had written that you had fell on the ice. And I'm happy to know that apparently you weren't hurt. I'm glad you like Elsie and Bill. I still see them a lot, and I think they are still tops. They have promised to write to you. It was truly a shock to hear that my friend, Dr. Mallett, passed away. It's rather hard to believe. He always seemed so healthy, and he could eat and drink like a horse. I feel awfully sorry for his three young kids. I think it is a darn shame that they are taking all those fellows with families and places of businesses. What's to become of their business that they have worked so hard to establish? You asked if I ever received letters from Isabel. I am sure that I haven't yet. I did receive two from Uncle Bruno, which, of course, I answered. And incidentally, I have established contact with Ralph, and I hope by the time you get this, he and I will have gotten together. You can't imagine how tickled I am to know of George's condition. Now I hope he can get back to his studies and someday be a great doctor. So you got a gift from Georgia. That's very interesting. I also got a very nice box from her, which reminds me, I better write and thank her. I still haven't received my camera, but there's still hope, I guess. I really envy Eddie Dolence. I don't see how some guys have all the luck. I guess I'll be sweating out this thing for the duration and also the 6 months. It seems as though I've been in this damnable army all my life. I suppose you are rather wondering where all this money is coming from that I have been sending home. I'll just say that I have instigated several enterprises, which at times proves rather profitable, and let it go at that. I understand quite completely that most of the people who are not in the army are making lots of jack now, so I don't want to be caught short, and I'm going to make and save all I can now. Last month, besides my monthly bond, which should make about 18, I sent $300, which today, folks, is $5,505. And if everything goes right, I expect to send at least $200, which today, folks, is $3,670, home within the next 2 weeks. That's not bad, considering that I spent $140 today, that is $2,569, on my London furlough, and have some $190, which is $3,486, lent out to different men in my unit. I don't suppose I better make this letter too long by starting another sheet, because I want to send you a few snaps, which will probably make the letter heavy enough. Give my deepest love and regards to all, and to you and Pop, my extra, extra deepest love, Gerald. I hate to say it, but those snaps he's talking about probably got confiscated. There were a couple of times that I saw, you know, that in his letters, he would mention, okay, I hope you enjoy these shots, these snaps, these pictures. And I would see a stamp saying 10 out of 10 photos were taken away. Corporal Gerald Morrow writes home March 5th, 1944, and he is still somewhere in England. Dearest Mom, I suppose you have been wondering why I haven't been writing lately. The first place, I've been pretty busy, and secondly, I have tried to write several times the last few days, but just haven't, for the lack of anything to write, been able to finish. It is almost midnight now, but I have made up my mind to finish this if it takes me all night. Though it has been some time since I spent my furlough, as you already know, in London, I'm going to try to write a little something about it. I don't suppose that London now is anything like it must have been in normal times, and though there are many things lacking in the largest modern city, 12 million, in the world, anyone can easily imagine that it is, was, and always will be a truly great city. From the first day I arrived in England, I anticipated seeing and visiting London and was thrilled by getting a chance of doing so by virtue of that most welcome and most needed furlough. We were told that it would cost a lot of money living in London. So through several enterprises, I managed to rake up about $160. Today, you guys, that is $2,936, which I thought should be more than enough, but it almost wasn't. Corporal Gerald Morrow writes back home to Mom, March 15th, 1944, England. Dearest Mom, don't have much to write about, but I thought that I would, hoping that this reaches you on or before your birthday. My sincerest wishes for a happy birthday, and to once more make sort of a little promise. I'll be home with you on your next birthday. And this time, I am more sure of it than I ever was before when I promised in vain. Spoiler alert, folks, he doesn't make it in time for her birthday next year or the following year on March 15th. In fact, it would be quite a while before he gets back home. And he starts to get more frustrated. But that's another day, another episode, and yes, another letter. So, going back. I hope that you receive the set of silverware on or before your birthday. I'm sure that you will because I sent it about 10 days ago. I did not buy that here in England, but got it before I came here. I really don't know how good it is, but then it might make sort of a souvenir. I was really surprised several days ago when I received a letter from Sam that he had written the day he landed here in England, and now, besides meeting Ralph, I am anxiously looking forward to seeing Sam. We are already trying to arrange to see each other. I just received a letter today from Gary, written, of course, by Marianne. Imagine the little guy being named Gerald. It goes without saying that I'm pretty swelled up about that. However, frankly, I never really did care much for that name. Okay, I need to break free again from the letter. He actually named my dad after himself, so it's kind of funny. I'd give my right arm to see that little guy. I guess I'm just about the luckiest uncle in the world to have such a swell bunch of little nieces and nephews. And Francis. I don't think I would have been more surprised if someone had told me that the war was over. I'm tickled pink about that, and I can just imagine how thrilled she and Buddy must be to be expecting a baby. I received a letter from Elvira, in which she mentioned she had seen the maps I sent, so I'm convinced that you got them okay. I have some more being developed, and if they come out, we'll shoot them to you. Well, Mom, again, I hope you the very best of everything on your birthday and every day. God bless you then and always. My deepest love, Gerald. So again, sadly, he didn't make it for the birthday for Mom. And it seems like every year he was like anticipating like, okay, next year I'm going to be here for that birthday, or I'll be there for Thanksgiving, or we'll be together for Christmas. And I mean, it really was just wishful thinking on his part, obviously. Poor guy. It did take him quite a while until he got back home and was reunited with his family.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all awesome. Haven't heard every single damn one yet? Well, there's no need to worry about it. Do not lose an ounce of sleep, my friends. You could hit up any of those podcast platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Downcast, Deezer. Basically, wherever you may roam to find your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and I will see you
next week.